We present Beachcomber by the Way, selections from the humour of J.B. Morton, with Richard Ingrams as the author.
Greetings, my public.
Interruptions from John Wells as Prodnose.
What is all this?
Be gone, you oaf.
And Patricia Routledge and John Sessions as several red-bearded dwarfs, amongst others. Beachcomber by the Way.
Good day to you, valets. Now, here's a good question.
What's a bad question, then?
Well, that was, for one.
Oh.
Now, the question has been asked recently, if a man finds a bird nesting in his hat, what should he do? Well, it depends upon the bird and upon the man. A powerfully built, rather selfish man will have no hesitation in ejecting an ostrich from his hat, whereas a small and sensitive little humanitarian will leave a thrush in possession rather than bang his hat in its face and turn it away empty. Indeed, sometimes a bird will return to the same hat year after year until the thing becomes unwearable. Each year the hat grows more and more like a nest until truant children swarm up the hat stand to steal the eggs. And then there finally comes a day when the old hat disintegrates and no bird will return to it. You might consider a bassoon to be a wiser purchase, but musical instruments too can have their hidden dangers. Ah, somebody mused, the critic is badly out of tune, and his glance swept round the orchestra and stopped at the first bassoon. For the bassoon player had a tame cormorant, which he had taught to lay eggs in his bassoon. Good people all, play properly, roared the conductor, and the player cried, I can't, my instrument is obstructed by the eggs of my cormorant. We present Life at Bolton Wynfever's, The Memoirs of a Serving Man, by Travers, butler to the peerage.
Hello. My master, Lord Shortcake of Shortcake Manor, often used to say, a man with hobbies is never dull. And he'd certainly had a few. Hobbies, that is. At the age of 56, he became very interested in pond life. However, Lady Shortcake had a strong distaste for anything to do with ponds.
Come to Daddy, my fine frogs to be. Swim, little men, swim.
Ah, Shorty, here you... What have you got in that bowl?
Martinis, my dear, my own recipe. Very good. Try some?
No. Those look like tadpoles to me.
Tadpoles? No. They're self-propelling cocktail olives. American idea.
One evening when there were, to our certain knowledge, seven newts loose about the house, my master turned the drawing-room upside down on the plea that he had lost a pencil.
Any sign of that great crested green pencil, Travers?
I'm afraid not, your lordship.
I'll try the piano. I hear that pencils are often attracted to music. Excuse me, my dear.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Shorty, sooner than have the house pulled down on top of me, I'll buy you another pencil.
Very kind, my dear, but I'm sure this one will turn up.
At which moment, a warty pate peeked out over the turn-up of Lord Shortcake's trousers, and a bull newt sprang onto the floor.
Aha! What do I see?
Where, my love?
There, at my feet. A dirty, slimy creature from some filthy pool.
Oh, yeah. It looks like a newt.
Catch it at once. Get rid of it.
It doesn't sting, my love.
I said catch it, you oaf.
Yes, my dear.
Luckily, as with most of my master's obsessions, this was only a short passing fancy. But I shall not easily forget a dinner party which took place at Bolton Wynfever's at the height of the pond life craze. A water spider, which my master kept in a matchbox on his person, escaped from the box during dinner, and was soon to be found disporting itself on the lower slopes of Lady Brashwell's ample neck. She took the tickling of the spider's legs to be the work of her neighbour, a retired colonel with a roving eye. This made the colonel, who thought he had impressed her, smirk fiendishly.
Life in the old dog yet, eh?
Lady Shortcake was disgusted.
Travers, No more wine for Lady Brashwell, and tell cook to drain the trifle.
At this point, the colonel finally spotted the spider and plucked it from its fleshy playground to the embarrassment of all concerned. My master was most anxious to have his sportive pet returned to him.
Yeah, Colonel, pass me the spider, quickly.
Whatever's the matter, Shorty?
I needed it to catch these naughty dragonflies. So, Midder, I didn't go, I was carrying.
Which was more or less the end of the pond life period at Shortcake Manor. And soon other fancies beckoned my master. I shall never forget the day when... But no, I'll tell you that another time.
Ah, now what are you doing?
Merely continuing my lexicographical pursuits, you dullards, dullard. There.
Oh dear, not more long words.
Yes, and some short ones too. All of them entries in my dictionary for today. Pay attention, lugworm. The letter B. Back to nature. Living in a caravan during a heatwave.
I see.
No, you don't. Bohemian, a young man or woman who sits on the floor at a party until someone offers him or her a lift to another party.
Cool.
Bombshell, the omission of a cricketer from a team.
Is there much more of this?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you like it so much. British modesty, the frequently repeated maxim that, although we are superior to other peoples, we never mention that superiority.
Dear, oh dear.
And finally, busy. This, of course, means idle. It's an adjective frequently used to describe rich women who have nothing to do, as in the following sentence. Lady Cab Stanley is one of the busiest women in London these days. There, that's enough.
You can say that again. Isn't there anything you like?
Oh, yes. Here.
Oof!
And now on to pleasanter things. Little has been seen recently of Captain de Courcy Fireenough, who is apparently dividing his attentions between increasingly frequent visits to the home of a beautiful Bayswater widow and his important new position as managing director of Catsfur Limited, a discount furrier's. Only a base, wicked mentality could possibly conjecture a link between the two.
What a magnificent cat you have, Mrs. Owsley Froome. A fine, healthy creature.
Call me Lynette de Courcy. After so many visits, I think we now know each other so terribly well.
Jeremy, Jeremy, what a fine cat you are.
And such a lovely silky coat, don't you think?
Indeed. And so much of it.
Your tea, Captain. Too terrible, all this cat-stealing one reads about in the papers.
Excuse me.
The man who could steal a cat ought to be shot, don't you think so?
No death is too good for such a man.
But you are so very kind to Jeremy.
He means a great deal to me, Lynette. Were he your ape, I would cherish him still. Perhaps while these cat thieves are about, you would like me to take care of Jeremy.
You think I should give you my dear pussykins?
Well, it would save him from being stolen. Oh, look, what good fortune. I seem to have a sack handy.
Ah, in you go, Jeremy.
At the premises of Mesor Catsfur, trade is booming.
My dear, you look divine. Simply divine.
Yes, but how can Catspur Limited possibly afford to sell an ermine cape for only £1.03 and 4p?
The answer is, or was, in Tavistock Square. A nice, plump pussy that formerly answered to the name of Pouchy. For the moment at least, Captain Fireenough remains one step ahead of the earnest investigations of the local constabulary.
So tell us again, in your own words, exactly what happened, ma'am, if you would.
Well, he was such a nice, kind gentleman. He came down the street distributing the most delicious morsels of fish to all the cats he could see. And he said to me, "Ah, Cookie, good morning to you, and how are we this morning? And why, bless my soul, do I not see a cat there?"
"A cat? Right, go on."
"Yes, sir, it's Pippi," I replied. Then he called out, "Hold there, Pippi. What about a nice tasty snack of fish, eh?" And he held out a morsel. And Pippi went up the area steps two at a time, and we haven't seen him since. He was such a nice, kind gentleman.
A description bound to divert suspicion from the captain, who in any case knows nothing about running a fur business. That is where Manon Caramel comes in. La Caramel, once the toast of the Brebi Quitus in the Place Pigalle, and now a general manager of Maison Catsfer.
Look at this, Captain. Competition.
Maison Pussycoat, popular pelts at perfect prices.
Yes, an ermine stole.
I prefer borrow.
For only 17 shillings.
That is low.
As is your tally of tabbies this week, de Corset.
A mere hiccup.
Really? One begins to wonder if your art is still in it.
Yes, for the first time in weeks, pleasure and business are having a tussle in the heart of the managing director of Maison Catsfer. Two beauties draw him with a single hair. Miss Lavinia Gratcham of Kensington, with her lustrous chestnut curls.
De Courcy.
And her cat, Moompy, with its glossy black coat.
Oh, De Courcy. It would break my heart if anything happened to Moompy.
No, it's no use, foul enough. You're a human being first and a fur magnate afterwards. You can't do it.
What do you mean you can't do it? 6 days you've been working on that Kensington Champion.
My dear Caramel, the road to a cat lies often through the heart of its mistress.
Bypass heat. Oh, perhaps you'd like me to appoint another managing director?
Oh, De Courcy. Thank goodness you're here. Moompie's been stolen.
Well, it wasn't me. What beast in human form can have done so vile a thing? Probably one of our directors.
Shall I inform the police?
No. Not till we know which firm stole...
Surely a big, strong man like you could get Moompie back.
I cannot promise. But I have some influence in high quarters.
Oh, that Kensington cat, Miss Gratcham's. Have any of our chaps hauled it in?
You bet. You are walking too slowly.
Is it a fur yet?
No.
Then we've got to return it. She got onto the police and said she suspected us.
You dirty rat! You have told us how!
On the contrary, we lose one skin, but we'll save our own. Just leave it to me.
Oh, Moompy! How glad I am to have you back. However did you manage to find him, officer?
A simple tip-off, ma'am. An anonymous phone call informed us that we were tying the aforesaid feline on the premises of Maison Pussycoat. They'll do time for this.
Oh, Captain, I'm so glad to have Moompy back. But what if it should happen again? Oh, Captain, what am I to do?
You had better let me keep it in safety for you.
And so the captain was able to rejoice over the ruin of Maison Pussycoat and also to acquire Moompy by taking the animal into protective custody. His duty to the firm outlasted his love for Lavinia, and by the time he reported to her that Moompy had been run over by a fish lorry, its silky coat was already swathing the broad back of a vulgar hoyden. And the captain is carving out an illustrious career in the fur trade, at least until next week. It is being said of a certain poet that though he tortures the English language, he has never yet succeeded in forcing it to reveal his meaning. Whether the verse smith in question might be Roland Milk, I leave for you to decide.
Quiet now. Quiet, please, everybody. That well-known poet, Mr. Roland Milk, will now read his latest verse, specially composed for tonight's gracious hostess. Mr. Milk.
Lines for Lady Cap Stanley's birthday. Oh, see the massive scale my lady's built on. She is the ground plan for a mammoth Stilton. Or upon days when her great face is redder, the blueprint for a more gigantic cheddar.
Yes. Lovely. Thank you, Mr. Milk. Music, please.
dear lady. What think you?
Mr. Milk, you shouldn't have gone to such trouble.
Nonsense. Oh, I do so want to do something big and clean in the world.
Then may I suggest, Mr. Milk, that you go and wash an elephant?
What a fine figure of a woman. There is a sad tendency amongst so-called vocal artistes nowadays to idolise in song the thin, emaciated type of girl who would buckle like a daisy were one to catch them a sharp blow to the mazzard with a moderate-sized turbot or whiting. Oh, for the days when men praised the hardier sort of woman, sturdily built heroines who would stand up to any barrage of wet fish with barely a flutter, and then bravely cry, "What? No chips?" Luckily, a few are still remembered in popular song. Mrs. Parsons, for example.
I've never seen the Taj Mahal in India, nor visited the tomb of Tamerlane. I've never watched the phosphorus that glitters in the Bosphorus, or looked at Fujiyama from the plain. The marvels of the world are not for me, but I am still content if I can see moonlight on Mrs. Parsons, moonlight on Mrs. Parsons. Gee, baby, I do not deign to crave a single kiss, but Mr. Parsons will not grudge me this. Moonlight, crazy moonlight on Mrs. Parsons. I've no objection to a genuine painting, and Wagner's always Wagner, and that's that. And though Rodin's famous thinker I consider quite a stinker, the dainty nymphs of Epstein knock me flat. Art in its place is all right, you'll agree. One touch of nature is enough for me. Moonlight on Mrs. Parsons, moonlight on Mrs. Parsons. Gee, baby, when at her best she simply strikes you dumb. She's like the local gasworks, and then some. Moonlight, crazy moonlight on Mrs. Parsons. I used to think the Cavell statue beautiful. I even praised St. Pancras in the mist. The sorcery of function I discovered at Crewe Junction, and Fulham Road came high up on my list. But all these lesser beauties fade away, and in an awestruck whisper now I say, moonlight on Mrs. Parsons, moonlight on Mrs. Parsons. Gee, baby, all the greatest artists fight for her. Of course, she might have sat for Lancia's favorite horse. Moonlight, crazy moonlight on Mrs. Parsons. Ah.
And now I present Trousers Over Africa, a thrilling episode from the life of Big White Carstairs. It opens at the English residency in Jabula, with evening dinner soon to be served.
Well, Carstairs, we're looking forward to having you stay with us.
Thank you, sir. But the pleasure will be mine. I do it for the Empire.
What perfect manners you have, Mr. Carstairs. Your rigorous devotion to the rules of etiquette and correct behaviour are legendary on the Dark Continent.
Thank you, but one is English, after all.
Quite.
Quite so.
Ah, 7 o'clock. Time to dress for dinner. See you in half an hour, Carstairs. 8:15 precisely. I never expected a man of Carstairs' schooling to keep his host waiting.
I'll send a servant to see what's keeping him.
No, he must be ill. Send for Dr. Gilmartin.
Oh, Daffy, this is a calamity. A calamity. The shame of it.
Carstairs, are you in there?
Oh, my head. Who is it? I'm ill.
Can I come in?
No, it might be catching.
But I'm a doctor. Dr. Gilmartin. You can trust me.
A doctor?
Yes. And a rugby man.
Oh.
Right. Now, where's the pain?
In my soul. My fool of a servant hasn't packed my dress clothes.
Och, the bounder.
Yes. I can't admit it to my host. It'd be too humiliating. It would go against all that is decent to pollute the dinner table by appearing in day clothes.
Tell you what. I'll make an excuse for you downstairs. A malaria or something.
Oh, thank you. But what of dinner tomorrow?
Maybe the native tailor can come up with something.
Well, Mr. Carstairs, 7:00. Time to dress for dinner. Now that your malaria has passed, we do hope you will join us tonight.
Yes, malaria. Gad, what's keeping the doctor?
Carstairs. Here, by the window.
Say!
Take this parcel. A visiting political officer left it behind a few years ago. It's a dress suit.
But it'll be years out of date. Wrong pockets, striped down the trousers too narrow.
It's all there is.
Oh, right. Thanks, old boy. Well, let's have a look at it. What? Where are the trousers? This can't be. A fella in the middle of Africa without dress trousers. The shame of it.
Carstairs. You coming down for dinner?
Oh, no. I'm afraid I can't. I've had a relapse. My belly.
I thought it was malaria.
Me too. But you just can't trust these foreign diseases.
And so passed another hot night. In his room, Carstairs paced to and fro, almost tempted to envy those backward and superstitious foreigners who dine in ordinary clothes. And that foul thought against which so many Englishmen have battled successfully remained with him until he fell asleep. When next day Carstairs took his evening meal alone in his bedroom, the resident sent for Dr. Gilmartin and demanded to know the truth. So it was that after dinner both he and his wife talked to Carstairs through the half-open door of his room, for, of course, he could not appear in day clothes, even after dinner was over.
I suppose, my dear, he couldn't just wear his dinner jacket and stiff shirt and so on, with flannel trousers.
You mean, let him dine in day clothes?
Not for a moment.
Why not?
Have you gone mad? What on earth would the natives think?
Ah, I hadn't thought of that.
One must never cease to think of that.
Better I starve and give a lot of agitators in England a chance to say that Greater Britain is represented by fellows who can't even dress decently.
Yes, of course. But what about tomorrow night? The official party. All the local traders, political officers and missionaries and so on will be coming. Mr. Carstairs will have to be there.
He'll think of something. He's not called Big White for nothing.
A fine party, Hubert.
Oh, thank you, Lady Ambuscare.
But where is Mr. Carstairs?
He comes now. Good. Good evening, Ambora. I hope you don't mind. I thought I'd wear my kilt. It's the gathering of our clan tonight, and
what clan?
The clan Lockjaw. They have the right to wear a white kilt, don't they, Carstairs? Yes. Well done. Yes.
Strange. The white kilt of the Lockjaw looks very like the white bath towel of the resident.
All right, yes. I admit it. My kilt is a bath towel. I deceived you all, but what was the alternative? I had no dress trousers.
And so, with this final public admission, the affair of Carstairs' trousers came to an end. He continued to dine in his room until the end of his visit, and there were no tears shed when he left. And hardly had he gone when the post arrived, bale after bale of parcels addressed to Carstairs, all marked dress clothes, handled with care.
Look at all these parcels. One more day and he'd have had enough trousers
to make a sleeping bag for an elephant.
One more day, and I should have forgotten my position and asked him to dine in day clothes.
But the resident's wife was only joking, or so we hoped. I see from a newspaper report that doctors are once more being attacked for their bad handwriting. The president of a conference compares it to piccolo music. An apt comparison when one remembers that a prescription written out by Dr. Bugloss for a Mr. Bag, who had a rash on his ears, went astray and was played at Queen's Hall by the first violin on a Wagner night.
And nobody noticed the difference, I suppose you're going to say.
Far from it, Weaselface. The music being considerably improved, the mistake was soon discovered and rectified, and the prescription was next published as a short story in an American magazine.
Poppycock.
No, I think it may have been the Reader's Digest. It was also used as a tariff in a tea shop, as shipping news in the Nuneaton Evening Chronicle, as a poem about a horse, as an interview with an Eskimo, as a horoscope for a builder's sweetheart, as a recipe for crayfish in white wine, and finally, as a threepenny tram ticket, taking the bearer all the way from the outskirts of Crewe to the central depot on a Wednesday. And so proving the old adage in the process.
What old adage?
That a little medicine goes a long way. Oh. As must you, cretin. Be off. Ooh! I wonder if there's anything interesting on the radio. Besides myself, of course.
Be coming to Mr. Roland Milk's latest poetry collection in a moment. But first, Julian and Chloe, have you found anything worth reading amongst the new books?
Well, yes, Gregory, one or two things.
Uh-huh.
I particularly enjoyed Brittle Galaxy by Barbara Snort.
Mm.
Dalton Sparley is the eternal figure of the hero who's the centre of his world and regards his own personality as the most important thing in life.
Of course.
Quite simply, 1,578 pages of undiluted enthrallment.
It sounds it. Chloe?
Gregory, I was absolutely enthralled with Splendid Sorrow by Walter Fallow.
Ah.
As it says on the jacket, was Ernst Horrenwurst, adventurer and rake, the Margrave Friedrich Meinigen of Hohenfürstenau Lebensblätter. Well, all I can say is that Mr. Fallow, in this new historical romance, has no hesitation in leaving the question unanswered.
Mm, really? Mm. And your second choice, Julian?
Well, Tricks with Cheese by Cheesophile of Cheese World. Very absorbing. Mm. The author, whoever he may be, appears to be able to make everything from a model of the Palace of Justice in Brussels to a bust of his aunt out of cheese. A very good book for the fireside.
Fantastic. And finally, Chloe.
Fain Had I Thus Loved by Frieda Trout, a
of
major
course.
Work.
Yes.
Miss Trout
yes.
has been called by the outcry the Anatole France of Herefordshire.
Who else?
And indeed there is an indescribable quality of something evocative yet elusively incomprehensible about her work.
Yes. I see.
Yes, and the character of Nida is burningly etched by as corrosive a pen as is now being wielded anywhere.
Jolly good. Mm. Well, there you have it. Four of the best new books.
Yes, yes.
And now Mr. Roland Milk will read from his latest collection.
Ah, that great poet, Roland Milk. How I love to relax in front of a warm fire with one of his many volumes. The books burn beautifully, as would most of those under discussion by the sound of it. Until next week, Uncle Beastly signing off.
That was Beachcomber, by the way. Adapted for radio by Michael Barfield, with Richard Ingrams, who appeared as Beachcomber. Patricia Routledge, John Sessions, and John Wells played the other characters. Your announcer was Perkins, and the producer was Thompson.